Well, again, the mics are back on, and we are in the MTP Software Radio Entrepreneurs Studios, and my name is Jeffrey Davis. Thank you, Frank Sincotta, and the whole MTP Software team for all the stuff you do in this great CRM in the sports and entertainment industry. Our next guest, returning guest, although was scared to come by himself, so he brought somebody with him, John Anastasi and Tom McNulty, partners at Landau and Anastasi, the law firm. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Now, we're going to talk about a case we know people are going to like. So we're going to talk a little football, right?
Well, I don't know how much football is involved.
Well, it's a football. He was a football player.
Football player, yeah.
Okay, I guess I'm more sensationalist than you are.
Yeah. Well, but you know, with any football player, there's always some management of a client involved. So that's
right.
Part of the case, I guess.
Right. Yeah. So why don't you give us a brief introduction to the firm again for those who didn't hear the first interview, and then we'll talk about the case.
Sure. So we're an IP boutique, 35 or so professionals, you know, attorneys, agents, and all we do is IP. So patents, trademarks, copyrights, and we get that protection for our high-tech entrepreneurial clients, and we enforce that protection or we defend against others who might assert their IP. And the last time I was here, we talked about, you know, what IP entails, patents, trademarks, copyrights, but we also I also mentioned that you'd be surprised how broad what IP touches, for example. And I think that's why we're here today, to talk about a copyright matter for an ex-Patriots linebacker and New York Jets linebacker, Matt Chatham.
So, you're going to fill us in?
Of course. Yeah. So, so when you think of copyright, you might think of like a recording or a movie or those sorts of things, which are typical copyright subject matter, but copyright is also other types of works, so sculptural works, or in this case, an architectural work. In particular, Matt designed his own custom-designed home on his own home computer with software, you know, that he purchased, and worked with an architect to make sure that that was structurally sound. And then they created plans so that a builder could build that home. And that is copyrightable subject matter. And, you know, I think in this case, there may be some, there was some confusion even on the part of the, he worked with a builder, but not only are the plans copyrighted, so, you know, you would think of the plans themselves as being, you know, a copyright is anything that you embody in a fixed tangible medium. So a software program, you create a drawing or a painting or a picture in a tangible medium, that's copyrighted subject matter. So the plans themselves are copyrighted, but the underlying work itself, the architectural work, is also copyright protected. And that's the basis of this case that Matt has. And maybe you want to tell them more about the case?
Yeah, I can certainly jump in here.
So this is Tom talking now.
Matt, I believe he knew you from some previous trademark-related work he had done.
That wasn't through football. You didn't play football.
No, so he's an entrepreneur himself. So this is not his first endeavor, but so we've done some patent and trademark work for him before. But this is a unique case.
Yeah. So anyways, he had hired somebody to build this house that he had designed. And the purchase and sales agreement, you know, laid out a specific time frame in which the house would be built. And as that time frame was getting close, I believe it was within maybe 2 or 3 weeks of the closing date, the foundation hadn't even been poured yet. There were all kinds of delays, all kinds of kind of nothing getting done. And so it ran late. It ran into some extension time, and at some point, the builder pulled the plug and said, "That's it. I'm selling this to somebody else," and put it on the market. And that led to a lawsuit in state court. Matt was suing for breach of contract. But at the same time, he got in touch with John and discussed what he could do, you know, with the fact that it was his design that was being built. And as John said, you know, you can get a copyright in the underlying design of the house as well as in like the blueprints. So we took the underlying design, registered the copyright.
So this is a point that is
of the design in the house.
Of the design in the house. So
wow.
So This is a point that is kind of nuanced that I don't think the builder understood, really.
I'm not sure.
I don't think the builder's attorneys understood this point.
Not that sophisticated a builder.
Well, you know,
I don't think it's that unusual for a large architect, like a national architect, to patent their designs.
Yeah, I mean, this is a local builder who...
Right, I know, not the same. Right. And that's part of the problem,
Yep, and he had a real estate firm representing him for the breach of contract matter.
I remember when I lived in Montreal... And they built the Olympic Park, just to give you the sense of the context. They built the Olympic Stadium in Montreal, and they hired an architect, José Thibert of France, and he had never built a property in North America, and the builders did not know how to build his property, here. And so there were construction errors through the whole thing.
Right, yeah. So here, you know, similar, you have all kinds of facts around the actual building, the contract, not delivering the home on time at the price point, all kinds of facts around that. But here, what the builder didn't really appreciate is that because he had custom designed his home, the builder couldn't build that home for anybody but Matt.
Yeah, the copyright prevents him from selling.
Right, that's what I would have expected.
Yeah, and there's language that was written into the agreement that sort of made that clear.
He thought he had a unique design, the builder, that he could go market somewhere else.
Well, and we think he might have been marking it as, you know, designed by an expatriate and, you know.
Right.
Like the Tom Brady
Aston Martin.
So when the contract expired, and there are factual disputes about why, how it was breached or why it expired. But when it expired and he tried to sell it to somebody else, and I think he had actual purchase and sale with somebody else, we stepped in. Well, first we registered the copyright, so that's something unique. But then once we had the registration, and there's a timing issue, which Tom can talk about. But once we had a registration, we were able to use that copyright registration as part of the overall lawsuit to stop the sale of the home.
It sounds actually quite easy once you got the patent.
Well, the copyright, but yeah.
Copyright.
Well, once you have the copyright, it gives you a lot of additional leverage in a lawsuit. Because
tactful. I would have thought that if I was going up against you, oops.
But, it's another claim, but it comes with the ability to get injunctions to prevent transfer of the copyrighted subject matter. You know, in this case, the house. It comes with the possibility of statutory damages, which, if the infringement is found to be willful, can go as high as $150,000. And it also comes with a attorney's fee shifting provision for the prevailing party. So it's
adding up, isn't it?
Than a contract suit, yeah. Right.
So even though copyright is automatically fixed in something, so when you draw a picture or record a song or create a painting, it's automatic. Its copyright is there already.
No, I'm thinking about that myself. So let's say I developed a room in my house after I went on 8 safaris and I made myself an Africa room and I came to you guys. I could sort of make that my look and make sure that the GC did not start copying it. Correct?
Yes.
Similar.
Yeah. Similar.
Probably.
And there's potential copyright in that. There's probably some trade dress or in that also. But my point was going to be on this copyright issue was, even though you get automatic even though you have automatic copyright protection, you know, in something as soon as you embody it, as soon as you store it on your hard drive, for example, a program, here we registered it, and the registration of it in the copyright office is what gives us those additional tools.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
So this really is your core competency? This is what you do?
Well, this is kind of
what we do.
It's among what we do.
Right.
The point is, I mean, our core competency is getting patents and copyrights and trademarks.
And you really have to be good at it.
And but my point of this, bringing up this example, is really that it touches a lot of things. I mean, this copyright pleading, this count in this overall lawsuit is really the hammer. They don't know what to do with it. They really don't. They don't even understand it. They filed a motion for summary judgment, which we opposed and we prevailed on. And in that motion, they really didn't have any answer for the copyright pleading.
Yeah, they had some defenses that they pled that just didn't really, frankly, make sense.
Here's my guess. You guys are very sophisticated attorneys at what you do. This is all you do. Did they have a sophisticated attorney on their side? I would think that The builder might not have the most sophisticated attorney.
I don't want to criticize their attorneys as perhaps lacking sophistication.
But I could.
They're not intellectual property people.
Experts.
So.
Right. They started out with a real estate attorney, and they eventually transitioned to another attorney.
Well, I don't want to go to a knife fight with my fists.
Right.
You know.
Right. But so the sophistication grew or became better along the way. But still, I think.
Yeah.
They don't have an answer.
One thing, a lot of litigators think, I can litigate anything that's put in front of me. I do litigation. And, there's probably some truth to that. The litigation component is a scale.
Well, there's definitely some ego to that.
But
I don't know about truth.
there's probably a little both. But there is some advantage when you're doing, something intellectual property-wise, for example, that has its own unique sort of sets of laws and case law and interpretations and whatnot, to have somebody that specializes in the intellectual property field. At least involved, if not actually doing the litigation.
So now I'm going to put on my other hat, that I have a fair amount of marketing background in addition to other skills as a management consultant. Was this something that the firm was able to market well to look for additional work? Because I think this is an interesting case that you were able to have that should be very marketable for you.
Well, that's one of the reasons why we're here, right?
Well, we're here for an interview, that's for sure.
I mean, ideally, this interview becomes part of a marketing strategy to show our expertise in all areas
of IP. When you're a thought leader, I mean, it's great to be a thought leader, but if you're the only ones who know, that's not being a thought leader. Thought leader means you should be, informing others, teaching people within your own profession, and really, setting the bar for you creating the way of doing things. So I think that's the important point. So
That's definitely something we're looking at. I think because it involves an expatriate. It has gotten some attention that perhaps the same case without an expatriate wouldn't have.
Right.
It's been right up
it's been
the
in
Herald.
The
well,
in
if
the
it was Nathan Gobes, I'm sure it wouldn't have gone anywhere. No offense to Nathan, he's a good kid, but
No, it has definitely. It's been in the Globe, right? It's been
the Globe, the Herald, some legal newspapers.
But it hasn't gone viral. Yet.
IP. Not yet.
and even some of the IP daily media sources are following the case kind of for its uniqueness. So it's definitely given us some exposure that That's we great. Otherwise may not have had.
Well, John and Tom, if somebody was looking for your firm and looking for help in the patent area, how would they find you?
All right. So our website, we talked about this maybe last time, is LALaw.com, like the TV show.
Yeah, that was a good show.
Yeah. So www.LALaw.com.
All right.
My email address is janastasi, JANASTASI, at LALaw.com. And my direct dial is 617-395-7001.
Okay.
And I'm at T. McNulty, MCNULTY, at LALaw.com as well. And my direct dial is 617-395-7040.
I liked L.A. Law, but not as much as Boston Legal.
Yeah.
Boston Legal
they
was
were both
a classic.
Good shows, but
Boston Legal was one of the funniest shows ever.
I can say that, we don't quite have the same,
You two don't have the same repartee?
No.
You're not getting married?
No, we're not.
Okay. That was a bizarre ending. My name is Jeffrey Davis, and we're not ready for any bizarre endings yet, but we are going to continue after this short break.